The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
All right, ladies and gentlemen around the Delaware Valley, on a beautiful Monday morning here in the Delaware Valley, welcome to the Who's Who in Philly Labor Show. We've got a fantastic show. Certainly, Palmer Hockey has been a fantastic sponsor and has really, you know, kept our labor show going for 9 years and so much going on there. And we got a big dog from Palmer Hockey, a partner, Mike Schaefer. Mike Parker.
Okay.
Mike Schaefer's coming. He'll be on next. Mike Parker, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. You know, last time you were on the program, okay, was 2019, October,
okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And I was obviously we have one of your, you know, one of the firm attorneys on every month. But I said, you know, let me go just do a quick check. Let me go to the Palmer Hockey website, because Mike Parker, because I had my interview from before and I laid it out there and it said associate. Okay, and I'm like, let me just do a quick check there, and there it was, partner.
Partner.
That's what I'm talking about. Congratulations. When did that happen?
It happened the end of last year.
Okay. Well, awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Anybody who's listening can tell. Mike, real quick, tell me a little bit about yourself and your career.
Sure. Well, I grew up in Massachusetts, if you can't tell from my accent.
You can stop right there. As you can see, Mike is from South Philly, okay? He's a Bishop Newman guy, and he is a... Oh, I'm sorry. We're going to get to your... I just wanted to prove a point there.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's fair. That gentleman, Mike Geyer?
Yes, sir.
First of all, Mike Geyer... You're a partner at the firm of Schaefer and Geyer. Mike Schaefer's on the broadcast as well. How are you, sir?
Great. How you doing?
Fantastic. So we'll start with Mike Geyer. Tell us, our listeners, a little bit about yourself.
Okay. I can go far back. Born and raised in Philadelphia. I'm 60 years old. Central High School, Penn State. Live in Conshohocken now. Mike Schaefer and I have been partners in our 21st year.
Wow.
And we're best friends. We get along great at work, laugh a lot, work hard. It's a good relationship.
Awesome.
Personally and professionally.
But you wish he'd give you a little hand at the firm once, just stop by on occasion, right?
Depends how you define hand, but yeah, okay.
By the way, Central.
239.
Is that 1980?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah. You too?
I played in the first City All-Star game. In Philly, I went to Roman, and I'm gonna say a name. I know where I'm going. John Marzano was the catcher.
I sure do.
And I remember they wanted us to steal on him. He was drafted twice, in a second, but Boston.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
Pawtucket too.
That's right. And he went to he got drafted first for Minnesota, right? But they wanted us to steal on him in the All-Star game, and he's throwing peas down there. At second base, also hit a line drive with a wooden bat off the center field wall at Temple. It's a City All-Star game. And we're like, maybe not. We're not going to, you know, it's an automatic out, and all the scouts were there. What a legendary, student at Central High School. God rest his soul. We made it to the majors, played for Boston,
He was a year behind me. I think he played football, too.
Yeah, did he?
Yeah.
Wow. Nothing surprises me. The guy was amazing, in spite of the fact that he played for Boston. Mike Schaefer, a little bit about your background, sir.
Thanks for having me. I grew up in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Came here to Temple. Happy to say Temple undergrad, Temple Law School. Could have gone anywhere, but the C bus doesn't go to Harvard. So went to undergrad and went to Temple, and was thrilled to see my Owls beat Nova on Friday. I've been a season ticket holder for Temple basketball for 30 years. So great basketball game on Friday night, seeing Temple beat Villanova. Unbelievable game. The students stormed the court twice.
What was the final?
They beat them by four. What happened was they hit two foul shots with 1.1. They threw the ball in. everybody runs the stand, you know, the students storm the court with 2.2 seconds left. The refs called a foul, had to clear the court, all the students to let some kid make two more free throws. So they beat him by 4.
It's incredible.
It was a great, great win.
You gotta wonder why they would,
I have no idea.
Well, I'll tell you. Okay.
Don't say Vegas.
I would say FanDuel. Right. You know, whoa, we can't stop this game.
Well, Temple covered no matter what.
Yeah,
right?
They were 5-point underdogs. Yeah. So it had, I was like thinking, unless it was the over-under.
Yeah.
Over-under maybe.
It's crazy. I know we talked sports, and you know, it's great to be on live radio. We are. And of course, we want to thank Drew Walker for making all this happen. Thank you, brother. And, you know, we just had an unbelievable run with the Phillies. And, you know, we got the Eagles tonight. Obviously, it's Monday Night Football. Big fan Mike Parker is, man. Yep. I can't say enough about that guy. I know you guys don't know it, but you know the guy with the eagle, you know, he's painted, he's got the shoulder pads. Well, you're sitting right next to him.
He's got
the blue and
the so between us, yeah. I can say this now. Between us, we have like 8 Super Bowls. Say the same thing to Pittsburgh fans, you know. I'm like, yeah, between us, we have like 7 Super Bowls now. We needed that Super Mike, I'm sorry, brother. But we needed that Super Bowl like it was going out of style. You know, I was at the Phillies World Series game when the Eagles were playing, also on the Thursday night. Never in my entire life was I ever at or watching or where the Eagles and the Phillies were playing, and the Eagles were second tier. Like, people were looking up because we were playing Houston. Thank God we won at least one of them games. But what a run! And let me tell you why I'm saying this. Oh, go ahead, Mike.
It takes a lot to get Philadelphia sports fans to focus on anything other Sixers hockey Flyers, right. or the Phillies when football's in play.
Absolutely.
And it was really good to see.
And the Eagles are undefeated. So you know, that's really huge.
No question about it. But what I love about what happened, and Mike Parker, you'll also get, you know, jump on this as well. And listen, by the way, no, I was as happy as anybody when Boston won the end of the curse, mother of God. But having said that, what the team did for the city that far exceeded baseball, man. I mean, brought an entire, in a sense, a fractured city back together. And I remember I was fortunate enough to go to the game, the first game back at their 17. And after the game, when Hoskins threw the bat down, nobody left. 10 minutes in. So, you know, it was one of those, it was like a spiritual thing.
Yeah, I have goosebumps as you're telling the story.
Oh, and, you know, so, I mean, I appreciate that. And you know what? Even though I'm a grown man now, and the worst experience I ever had in my entire life was when Joe Carter hit that home run.
Oh, yeah.
You know, psychiatrists just telling me a couple more years and I'll have a breakthrough, but...
Every once in a while, you'll see either on ESPN or YouTube, you know, top 10 World Series moments. And that's routinely in the top 3. And it,
what makes it worse is the pitch that Mitch Williams threw was a crappy pitch. The first one, he swung it, it looked like a crappy swing. Same second one, he hit it and it's over. But I'm a grown man now, and I will tell you this. You know, I'm proud of these guys, and I got over it, even though it hurt for a couple days.
It took
you
25 years, and you almost processed it.
Yeah, well, we're getting there. The psychiatrist sees a breakthrough. Another 5-10 years.
More medicine.
That's great.
Exactly. So let's get into a little bit of the law and a little bit about the firms. Obviously, Mike, unless you're driving with your eyes shut on any road in the region, you've heard of Pond LaHockey. And of course, Sam is a great, great friend, and we've had a great relationship for years. But remind our listeners, you know, people think work injuries and all that, but there's a big scope there, what you guys do, and in particular, what you do. Talk about the firm and the scope of individuals you guys represent.
Absolutely. So Sam promotes what we call the holistic approach.
I can take it from there, but go ahead.
To a claim. So an individual will come in perhaps for a workers' compensation claim, and we'll analyze whether that individual has a long-term or short-term disability claim, whether they have a Social Security disability claim, and we'll pursue all avenues for that individual. I head up our long-term disability department, in which I pursue actions against insurance carriers that the individual has, whether it's through their employer or whether it's an insurance policy that they purchased on their own. I help that those individuals obtain those benefits.
And you, if I'm not mistaken, you actually helped put together the long-term disability department, right?
Absolutely. I was driving to Newark one day, and it was snowing really bad. And I saw an email from Sam. I was going to do a Social Security hearing. I saw an email from Sam. Does anyone have any interest in forming a long-term disability department? And so I had previously done that in my prior firm, and it was a great practice. And so I put my name in, and they essentially gave me the reins, and I formed this department, and we've done well the last couple of years.
And when, how long back ago was that?
I want to say it's about 4 years now.
Now, that holistic approach, and I've had that conversation, we're talking work injuries, personal injuries in regards to third-party claims where you work with firms like Schaefer and Geier, and also the additional types of obviously Social Security disability, long-term disability, and that's an approach that is, you know, people walk in, they're lost as it is. They often know very little about what they might be eligible for. Talk about that.
Sure, and let me also say that this firm. Right here, Schaefer and Geier, the fantastic firm. We actually had a case in which we worked with them. We handled the workers' comp aspect, and then they just had a massive verdict in regards to the personal injury side, which I'm sure they'll expand upon. But we, in terms of our practice, with Social Security, we look to see the individual's age, the work that they held in the past, and Social Security is pretty regimented in terms of the rules that they have for an individual with a disability claim. And so we're well-versed in terms of handling any type of claim, whether it's psychological in nature, physical in nature. We handle it all. At one point, I was doing well over 50 hearings a month doing Social Security disability. But at this juncture, I do handle some of those cases as coverage, but my main focus is the long-term disability department.
So Mike Geier, Mike Schaefer, let's talk about what you guys do. I tell you, I was going over your website, and I was pretty intrigued because a lot of personal injury, but also you get involved, Mike Geier, you get involved in real estate issues as well?
That was when the financial crisis of 2008 hit.
Oh, okay.
We put together a foreclosure defense practice. Started from nothing, built it into over 1,000 people we defended. That largely has abated because the crisis is over. It's been almost 15 years. But that was kind of exciting because we started a practice from scratch. We're one of the only firms in the area that were doing it. But that's kind of behind us now because the economy, it was a long time ago.
Sure.
Administration, banks handle things differently now. So today we just focus on the personal injury.
And so let's talk about the personal injury. What type of, Mike Schaefer, what type of cases do you handle and work with?
Really, right now we're focusing on mostly three different cases that we're working on. Medical malpractice cases where they're negligence of a physician or a hospital. Construction accidents, industrial cases where someone has an accident at a construction site. And the third area, which has really been challenging but gratifying, is children or youths who have been sexually or physically assaulted in schools or homes. We have represented them and their parents where they have been victims of that kind of abuse.
And so, I have done a number of shows with Sam on that type of situation. And so I'm pretty familiar with it. And at first, my first thought was, okay, how do you sue some criminal? Whoa. The institution that allowed it, okay?
Correct.
I want to cover all the areas. Is that cool?
Of course.
Okay, yeah. Good. Let's talk about that one since we're on it. So we're talking about a civil side of a sexual assault type of situation, right?
Well, what happens is a lot of the children are nonverbal, can't speak, and the parents only find out about it weeks, months after the event. And our job is to first be a good listener, absorb everything, and then tell them what the process that lies ahead, because it's not always easy to listen to, even easy to watch. We have a couple of cases where the assaults are on video, and you then have to work backwards, and there's privacy issues. We all heard of HIPAA. There might be other people in the video screen. You have to be kind of cognizant to keep them out of it. But having to get the parents to relive what happened to their child is painful.
It's painful for us. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, interesting enough, and I touch on that because I want to talk about the culture at the firm. Okay.
Right.
We're going to delve into the depth of those three areas. But let's think about it for a second. You guys are doing a radio show today. Okay. That's a very sensitive area. You know, you talk about your intake. I know pond hockey, what your intake is. Right. I mean, it's a science, you know, and at the same time, and it goes with, you know, it's a devastating situation either way. But when you're talking about what you gentlemen are talking about right now, Mike and Mike, guess what? The culture of the firm and having somebody who answers that firm is every bit as important as the individuals representing the case and the sensitivity. Talk about that. And the team you have there, because that is a very sensitive area.
I try to say we're not just a counselor of law. Sometimes we're counselors.
Absolutely.
Literally counselors. Because we have experience in these type of cases. So we know we're not giving legal advice per se. We're giving life advice. Because we know the process, the pain that they've been through and what they're experiencing through them and through their children. Michael and I both have children, and we know that they want to come through the phone and take action against these defendants.
Sure. Absolutely.
And believe me, we'll fight for them as hard as possible and to the, you know, within the limits of the law, of course. So we know what we can do, and we want to advocate for them as hard as we can. And frankly, it always comes down to the defendants always scrimp on money. They never hire enough people. They never have enough supervision. And when we see the records and we see the staffing, you want to scream. It is deplorable.
Now, so, some of the organizations, we don't have to get, you know, although I've done a lot of these shows, but to give an example, like, I'm a Catholic, okay? I'm not trying to whisper it. I'm on live radio.
Well. Right?
Yeah. And I remember when the Pope came to town, right? One of the most important things for me was the big elephant in the room, and that is he going to talk about the molestations, okay? Because, you know, we weren't born yesterday, brother. And guess what? He brought it up, and I was really appreciative of that. Yeah. I'm not really a practicing Catholic, but I could say, you know, I've been, you know, Catholic school my whole life, the whole deal, and so I feel I can. But organizations like that, the Boy Scouts and stuff like that, are there statutes of limitations on those things?
They're trying to work with them right now. Their criminal statutes have been abated to bring criminal statutes, but they haven't been able to pass the full limitations with regard to the civil side. So we're working on many of those. However, with regard to, there's been a big change with regard to suing the government, because it used to be that if you had to bring a claim against a school or a governmental agency, you can only bring what's called a civil rights claim. Thankfully, the Pennsylvania legislature saw fit to change the law, and now for a sexual assault that occurred in a school or on a government property, you can bring a civil claim against the school for that. So thankfully, the Pennsylvania legislature was smart enough to change the law, because there were many, many claims that were dismissed because you couldn't prove a civil rights claim, because that standard was really, really, really high, as opposed to a simple negligence claim, where if it happened with a private institution, same kind of claim, but you couldn't sue the governmental agency, which is still the same despicable, deplorable conduct and the same horrible damages to these poor children. But thankfully, the Pennsylvania legislature did change that law very recently.
Yeah, only 2 years ago they changed it, and they expanded the rights of victims in a way they really never did before. So before, we would have to prove an entire civil rights violation, which is not easy to do. It's often in federal court, and it's challenging. But what they did 2 years ago was they made bringing an action against a school or a governmental body essentially the same as if you had a car accident against the city of Philadelphia, the county of Montgomery, or something like that. So it really helped a lot.
Yeah, so I asked about the statute of limitations because people, you know, who may be listening right now that don't know that, how far can some of these things have gone back?
Well, if you're a minor, you don't have to bring a claim until you're 18 plus 2. So in other words, you don't have a claim, in other words, until you're of majority. So if something happens when you're a minor, and so until you're a minor plus 2. In other words, so God forbid something happened when you were a child, your claim doesn't become ripe until you turn an adult.
Now, was there a case that really impacted just where you said, we're gonna spend some time on this and really, we're gonna delve into it. We're gonna represent these individuals. We're not gonna let them fall by the wayside.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, without getting into names?
Yeah.
Without getting into names.
Sure.
A 15-year-old boy, nonverbal, shared a room. Was in a facility for a couple of his mother and father moved him from New York to this facility in Pennsylvania. And the deal was we'd like our son to go to your school, live there, have full-time care, but we want a camera in his room, not so we could see what's going on with your staff, but because we want to see our 15-year-old grow up. We live 120 miles away in New York State. So is that okay with you? They said, sure, no problem.
It's amazing that they even allowed them to do it, but thankfully, I guess they did.
So they put a camera in the room, and they can see their son 24/7.
Like a nanny cam.
Yeah. And then he's there for 3 months, moved in March, then 4 months in July. His mom would sort of end her day, say 10 o'clock, and then scroll backwards and see her son did for the last couple of hours.
Sure.
And at 11 o'clock at night, she's watching on her iPad, and she sees another boy, much bigger, same age, teenage boy, open the door, and you can see on the camera screen that it goes from a dark room where he was sleeping till there's some light in the room from the hallway. The other boy takes his clothes off and then sexually assaults, in the worst kind of way, the sleeping boy. The mom... we know them by first name now. We've represented them for a long time. It's really hard for me not to say their names.
No, it's okay.
So she sees this in horror, gets on the phone, calls down to the facility.
It happened 2 hours before she viewed it online.
Happened at 9. You can see on the time on the screen. It happened at 9 p.m. She saw it at 11 o'clock.
She was probably on a plane by 1 in the morning, but to...
What's almost worse is as the assault's going on, it's dark in the room. You can still see the bodies moving, but it's dark. You then see the door open and the light comes in again, and you see an aide walk in nonchalantly like he's done it before. And there's no audio, but you can see him tap the assailant, basically, I'm using my finger saying, get off of him. The assailant stands up, naked, can see everything, puts his pajama bottoms on, walks out of the room. The staff then is looking at the victim laying there. He points. He sees something on his body. Takes our client's sweatpants or pajama bottoms, tosses them on his naked body, and then walks out of the room.
Man.
2 hours later, after the mother calls, you could then again see the door open, and now three staff members come in because the mother said, hey, this is what happened to my son. Can you go help him investigate? And they walk in. They point up to the camera. They realize it's been on film. They don't offer him any real assistance. He's then showered, so whatever evidence was on him is no longer on him. The next morning, I'll let Mike Schaefer take it from there. But the next morning, they go to the hospital and
they finally take him to the ER. But they shower him completely, so any DNA is gone. They take him to the ER, and he thankfully, what's called a SANES nurse, a sexual assault nurse, comes in and does an examination, which they do an independent examination. And at the ER, they find what's called anal fissures, which are cuts to his rectum.
Sure.
And that's documented in the ER report, and he has abrasions on his rectum. The defendants have said that those fissures are caused by the boy picking at his rectum because he's constipated. That's their defense.
Okay.
So we're happy to go to trial with this case. It has been, we did an investigation. The defendants in their statement said that they were supposed to have, that the horrible thing is the assailant was supposed to have constant supervision during all waking hours. He was not supervised at all. Our boy, who was in the bed, was supposed to have 10-minute bed checks. Never happened. We have it on tape.
So was the defendant, the kid, you know, the kid who did it.
Correct.
They obviously knew there was a problem or something like that.
Every kid that, no, in his care plan, every child there, because of their special needs, every kid there is supposed to have 24-hour supervision because, unfortunately, because their mental capacity, they're 15 years old. They know these things are going to happen, and we got this kid's records. He has done things like this before. We have statements from some of their staff saying he had tried to do this to this poor boy before. He has scratches on him from this poor boy before. And we know, frankly, when I've done these other cases before, many times, almost without exclusion, the victims do not blame the perpetrators because the perpetrators also have mental problems. They almost, because they realize that the perpetrators have a handicap. It's the supervision. They're supposed to be monitored 24/7 for that exact reason. They can't control their urges, and that's why they're supposed to be monitored. That's why our boy is supposed to be getting 10-minute bed checks.
So it's the institution that dropped the ball, obviously.
If they just put an aide in the hall, this wouldn't have happened. I think there's eight rooms, eight boys in this pod, they call it, and there should be four supervisors or four staff members, and all you need is one in the hallway. If you saw the assailant walking through the hallway, opening up our client's bedroom door, they would say, hey,
stop.
Get back to your room.
Now, did you already, are you in the middle of that case, or did you settle
it? I like to say we're in the seventh inning.
Okay.
Right. Would that be?
That'd be fair.
Fair to say? Yeah.
Well, listen, I really appreciate, you guys talking about it. Obviously, privacy is of the essence.
Can I add one thing?
Please.
I want to say 2 or 3 days after the assault was on the video, the school says no more cameras allowed in the rooms.
Incredible.
Of course.
And they claimed it was some Pennsylvania Department of DHS mandate, and there was...
What did we do to get those cameras back on?
Filed an injunction in federal court either that day or the next day and said, this is nonsense.
Mother of God. Well, listen,
and the cameras are back in the rooms.
Yeah, and certainly, and I get it, the civil side of sexual assault. There's a number of, how do you even follow up on that? I mean, God bless that child, and obviously, change happens in the courtroom, and you guys are making that happen. And we've had, like I said, to Mike Parker, we've had Sam Pond and I have done shows on that topic. And if there was this emotion, I remember one time I sat down with Sam and I said, Sam, because we planned a show and Sam was out of town. So Jerry Lee Hockey did the show. It was really impacting, man. And then I said to Sam, we have to do this show. You should have saw the look on his face. It was, and so I want to thank you guys for what you are doing on behalf of that family. And in essence, because change happens in the courtrooms, that must give you, obviously, justice is the incentive, for the family in what you're doing. But also the fact that what you are doing, like the injunction, and in a sense, providing opportunities for other kids who are in them situations not to go through that again. That must give you satisfaction.
I know I've met Sam before. Sam looks at his job like a vocation like we do.
Yeah.
It's not just a job. Sam Pond is a vocation.
Yep.
And the way he represents injured workers and the way we look at our profession, it's a vocation, not a job.
Absolutely.
And the way Pond LaHockey, it represents injured workers is a calling.
Yeah,
no doubt about it. Oh, that's the way we approach our work.
100%.
Absolutely. Let's do this. Let's take a little break. We'll have more from the Who's Who in Philly Labor Show after the break.
Pinnacle Medical Plus is a full-service urine toxicology and durable medical equipment company serving patients throughout the continental United States. With over 25 years of industry experience, the professionals at Pinnacle Medical Plus provide high-quality services and products combined with excellent service at a reasonable price. On the urine toxicology side, Pinnacle is a trusted partner that provides the most up-to-date therapeutic drug monitoring technology. On the DME side, Pinnacle offers an extensive list of premium products along with priority delivery services. At Pinnacle Medical Plus, their number one goal is making sure their customers and patients receive the quality care and services they deserve. Contact Pinnacle Medical Plus for all of your urine toxicology and durable medical equipment needs at 888-396-8644 or online at www.pinnaclemedicalplus.com.
Serving my country required sacrifice. Sacrifice that changed my life forever. I remember the day I came home. Because of my injuries, this house wasn't right for me anymore. I remember the narrow doorways, the small bathrooms, the shelves out of reach when in my wheelchair. Every day was full of obstacles. I felt trapped. I remember a better day, the day my family received a specially adapted custom home from Homes for Our Troops. That day changed everything. Now we have a safe and accessible home to enjoy the freedom I fought for. This place, our home, is exactly what we needed to rebuild our lives.
Homes for Our Troops builds and donates specially adapted custom homes nationwide for severely injured post 9/11 veterans and enables them to rebuild their lives. Join our mission at hfotusa.org.
On the battlefield, there's a saying America's military men and women live by. Never leave a fallen warrior behind, ever. Off the battlefield, Wounded Warrior Project operates with the same goal. Wounded Warrior Project was created to help our men and women returning home with the scars of war, whether those scars are physical or mental. Wounded Warrior Project. We never leave a fallen warrior behind, ever. Learn more about what we do at woundedwarriorproject.org.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Who's Who in Philly Labor Show here on WWDB Talk 860. We want to thank Tony Shore, Pinnacle Medical Plus, for making it happen. We also have another guest who's come into the broadcast, Dr. Bruce Grossinger, Grossinger Neuropain. Doc, how are you, sir?
Doing great. I was listening to the horrific description painted out about the sexual assault case, and I could just say one thing objectively. The client is very lucky to have this law firm representing him. It was truly horrific, and fortuitous that there was video evidence for this poor family, and justice will be served.
And it well said, Doc. And we're going to do this because, believe it or not, we got about 25 minutes left. I'm going to spitfire through this. By the way, shout out to Matt Menarik, our producer. Matt, do me a favor, cancel the next two shows. We're just going to roll with this. That's probably not going to happen, guys, but we gave it a shot. Mike Parker, you handle Social Security disability and obviously the long-term disability. I want to make sure we get a lot of things covered here.
Absolutely.
Talk about when somebody should file for Social Security disability. Everybody thinks they have to be, catastrophically injured to the point where they can no longer walk, but that's not exactly true.
It's not at all. Social Security disability, first and foremost, it's not a handout. It's something that every individual who paid Social Security FICA tax, you purchased an insurance policy with the federal government. A percentage of your pay goes there, and you have this policy.
You mean it's not an entitlement?
It is not an entitlement. I'm sure Sam has said that many a time.
That's right.
But in order to prove that you're disabled for Social Security purposes, you have to show that you can't engage in substantial gainful activity. So essentially, you don't have to show that you can't work at all. You have to show that you're limited to such an extent that you could not engage in full-time gainful employment.
In the employment that you were doing. So if I'm a union iron worker, I can't do that type of work. And you have to be out, I guess, a year, correct?
Well, you have to be expected to be out for 12 months or more or have a condition that will result in death. But yes, you have to be out for 12 months in order to qualify.
So when you say a condition that will result in death, Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS.
So if they see that diagnosis, that will be fast-tracked and would likely be approved without the need of a hearing.
Okay, and having said that, I have had friends that have tried to fill out the Social Security disability package on their own, and although, like Tom Giordano says, you can do it, the fact of the matter is it's you make a mistake on it because it's hard enough as it is. It doesn't cost anything to come into the office and have you guys do it, correct?
Correct. We do all consultations for free, and we work on a contingency fee basis, so we only get paid if we recover for our clients. That is such a crucial aspect to the case, is to complete the forms correctly initially. Social Security, part of the analysis, and you alluded to this, is whether the individual can perform their past relevant employment.
Right.
So the Social Security uses an antiquated book called the Dictionary of Occupational Titles to determine what the jobs classification was. And that, frankly, was last updated. I think I was 5 years old at the time.
Right.
So I'm 43 presently.
So they're a little behind.
A little behind there.
Yeah.
So it's important to describe your job, how you actually performed it, how much you lifted, carried, how long you were on your feet, how long you sat, things of that nature. So if you're at a certain age, your burden of proof changes. As of age 50, if you're limited to what's called sedentary duty work, which is work where you don't lift more than 5 to 10 pounds, and you would sit majority of the day. If you never did that before, and you're limited to that, and you're over the age of 50, you're disabled as far as Social Security is concerned. Excuse me. If you're over the age of 55, and you're limited to light duty, which is no lifting more than 20 pounds, some difficulty standing and walking, you're disabled if you're over the age of 55 and you limit to light duty.
Right, because there's no likelihood that you're going to be able to retrain and get another career.
Exactly.
After 30 years as a maintenance worker.
That's the analysis. And the closer you get to retirement age, the less likelihood Social Security will come up with what are called transferable skills. For you to transfer to a new type of employment.
So, and again, it's a contingency fee. There's no out-of-pocket costs. We talked about the culture at the firm at Schaefer and Geyer, where you have a quality staff making sure that when somebody calls, it's almost like you get the partners because it's, and there's a lot of, we're going to talk a little personal injury as well in regards to accidents and slip and falls and all that. But the fact is that you need somebody who's sensitive calling because it's a bad time. When that phone rings, okay, somebody's having an incredibly bad day, And you need to have somebody who's sensitive, that there's an extension of the partners. At Pond-le-Hockey, as well as Schaefer and Guyer, that's a science. You know, in other words, that intake is second to none on the planet. They can talk about that.
Yeah, so we have an intake in program in which we have people who are specifically trained. That's their job. They take the individual through the initial application. We get them rolling right from the start. And then we have case managers throughout the stages to help the individual client along the way. Attorneys are involved at all aspects of the case. And, you know, we typically have teams in which the individuals fall under. And then an attorney will represent them at the hearing.
And it takes time. So it's so important to have that, in a sense, you know, that whole hand-holding through the process.
Yes.
You know, they're not in any hurry to, give anybody a break, you know, unless it's a, you know, like you said, it's a likelihood of a death with ALS or.
Yeah.
So that long-term disability, is that have to do like with a policy that somebody has, like a long-term disability policy? Like if you get injured in work and it's a work injury, or it's and you have a long-term disability policy, they don't just say, "Yo, by the way, we get it. You know, here's your long-term disability. Surprise, surprise."
Yeah. So I have a story of a case that's meant a lot to me because I just was successful in helping my client's wife obtain benefits for my deceased client. This individual client went through treatment for chemotherapy treatment for pancreatic cancer. He worked the entire time. Then he goes out of work on a Friday because he's going to have surgery the following week. The insurance company found him disabled on Monday instead of the day after he stopped working. And because he passed away less than 180 days from his onset of disability, as far as the insurance company was concerned, his wife was not entitled to survivor's benefits under his policy, and they were asking for money back from his estate. If they had found that he was disabled the day after he stopped working, he would have been disabled for 181 days, and she would have been entitled to the benefits. There would be no overpayment. So I argued that it was arbitrary and capricious for them to find that he was disabled as a Monday instead of Saturday. And fortunately, we resolved that claim.
You did?
We did.
Shout out to Mike Parker, man.
It was fantastic. It was a great win. My client's thrilled. So, you know, if an insurance company denies the claim, you always have recourse.
And a lot of them do it as a protocol. And that's an awesome story, man. I mean,
okay.
And again, long-term disability is also contingency fee. No,
100%.
Awesome. Dr. Bruce Gosinger, welcome into the broadcast. If you would, remind our listeners a little bit about yourself, a board certified neurologist, and what you do for injured workers and personal injury victims.
I'm really proud that over the last 30 plus years, I've been able to give my time and help a lot of victims of various matters, workers' comp, motor vehicles, slip and fall, et cetera, even victims of medical malpractice, and to be able to work in concert with fine lawyers such as yourself, Mr. Parker, and fine gentlemen who sit in front of me. And what I do really is I act as a quarterback for the team. Those papers don't get filled out on their own. Those 1,000-page disability or even the OWCP, the federal comp, there's just a lot of paperwork, and we have a whole staff at Grossinger Neuropain to assist me and provide in buttress what I do. And what I do really is just meet the patient on day one, whether it's the day after the work injury, let the 90 days be damned, right?
There you go.
Or
absolutely.
Whenever. And basically, without regard to payment, just make sure they get great care. A lot of these claims get denied. And everything within my power. Today, I just finished a deposition 20 minutes ago where this person is going to have a herniated disc. They've got weakness, atrophy, and numbness. And the insurance carrier refused to allow them to get an MRI of the neck because the comp case is not accepted. It's at a review petition level. So under my control, I have the EMG. I was even able to do a fluoroscopic epidural injection. So that kind of goes to the scope of service, concussion, sports medicine. I also do a lot. I work with a lot of the professional athletes here. Doc knows that. He's been in my office. And I'm really proud that we have an interface, not only with the unions, but also with the professional teams and a lot of retired NFL, NBA players, and that I do a lot of tissue. I did my fellowship at Stanford University, so I do tissue transplants. I do real stem cells. You hear a lot about Doc-in-the-Box, Walmart stem cells. We froze somebody's umbilical cells from St. Elsewhere, and we injected it. Bowling for dollars, as we say.
Yeah.
We actually do real stem cells. So the Cobb carriers actually approve stem cells in PRP, platelet-rich plasma. PRP was certainly made famous by our famous former right fielder, now designated hitter, MVP, Bryce Harper, mm-hmm. who was able to play in bat really through the World Series, but for the PRP of his partially torn extensor tendon. So that's kind of what we do. And it's great to see Schaefer, Guyer, and Parker, the three Mikes, the three Musketeers, are here on this hallowed stage.
How about the Mikesketeers? This is the Mike and Mike show. Doc, you also, obviously, if you mentioned you come from a deposition credibility, being a neurologist, it must give you and obviously credibility in regards to individuals, because I know that, you know, the other side's coming in with some people who have seen the patient for 3 minutes, maybe five, no longer than 10. Talk about that.
Yeah, I believe that I'm not a lawyer, but as a treating physician, it gives me a privileged spot, you know, because I've seen the patient a lot of times. A lot of time the defense doctor, so to speak, in Delaware, we're allowed to call them defense medical. Here, they're still considered independent, you know, so that's the one place Delaware's more progressive. Everything else, they're in the Stone Age. You still see Barney Fife down there. But in any event, the ability to also I do work for the city of Philadelphia. I do work for corporate entities. And because I do so-called defense work, not only claimants work, it gives me a little gravitas, particularly in the workers' comp arena and superior court arena. And also knowing how to talk always helps. And many doctors do not. And so I think the idea of being able to go soup to nuts, to be able to treat them from day one, quarterback, the things we don't do physical therapy, we don't do chiropractic care, we don't do neurosurgery. So I can do everything within my province, but also if they live out in Lancaster, I have somebody doing therapy out there. If they're down in Dover, Delaware, wherever they are, if they're in New Jersey, in South Jersey, a ton of people. So really I'm a quarterback. I don't see them frequently, but when I see them, I spend about an hour each time. So my scope is EMG, neuro, concussion management, neuropsych, and also all interventional spine care in the operating room. I have three operating rooms. So I'm a little bit out of the box for a neurologist, pretty hands-on. And I really love what I do. In our office, they've been there. You've been there, Doc, many times. They didn't just roll off the turnip truck. They've been in my office for 10, 20, 30 years. It's a cohesive unit, but it's also a happy place where people come in sad, depressed, and in tears. They bring family. They'll hear music. They'll get fed. They'll think they're in the new Four Seasons.
Boom.
Putting modesty aside,
because
I'm a very modest person.
Having said that, gentlemen, Schaefer and Guyer, I knew you guys do medical malpractice, and that's a long conversation and all those things. It's very rare that, you know, you see so many people that have it on their website, but people that actually do it, it's almost like it's a privilege to have you on the show. But having said that, the other types of personal injury that is handled, a catastrophic injury, auto accidents, slip and falls. Talk about that wide array.
We're happy to report. We just did a case. We just tried a case last week where Pond Lahaki referred us, or they did the comp part of the case. It was an industrial case where a worker was hurt at the a plant down at the Gray's Ferry.
So it's third-party construction as well,
yes.
Right? Okay, yeah.
And we got an $8.2 million verdict on behalf
awesome.
Of our client.
That's fantastic.
So he was a construction worker. Huge piece of steel fell on his pelvis. And
wasn't an iron worker, was he?
No.
That's my union.
Non-union.
Okay. All right, listen, you know, everybody deserves Yeah, that's a whole nother conversation, but I it's great.
It was about a 10,000-pound catwalk that fell off a forklift onto his pelvis.
Oh, he was lucky to live through that. That's a horrific crush injury. It obviously terribly disabling in itself.
The pelvis went from 22 inches down to 6 inches. If you can imagine.
And the pelvis is the strongest bone in the body. We liken the pelvis to a pretzel because you can't break the pretzel at only one place. So you'll never see a single pelvic fracture. Obviously, this sounds like a comminuted, crushed, and the fact that there are so many important bodily injuries, GU and all that, within the pelvis, the lower abdominal area, just on the face of it, it's a horrific injury.
And he didn't pass out, so that made it even worse. He
conscious, painted suffering was horrible. Yes.
So we talked about that, and boy, did he... He was a great witness, and what he talked about was, and maybe, Doc, you could talk about this, was how his hip was crushed and how he was 28 at the time. He limped, and our doctors talked about how he's going to need a hip replacement. He's going to have a hard time walking, and I'm sure you have patients like that all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're dealing with the pelvic structures. You're dealing with the bladder, and the bladder is very fragile. All the structures down there with urination and sexual function – plus, you've got the hips, you've got the trochanters on both sides. So you're looking at a crushed pelvis, and in order to reconstruct a pelvis, it's difficult, if not impossible. It's like crushing. It's like taking a hammer and hitting a pretzel. That's what you're describing. You can't put Humpty Dumpty back together again.
What he explained was when he was in the emergency room, they had to stabilize the hip, so they got a DeWalt drill and drilled into his hip while he was awake. They numbed him. But they drilled into him so they could put a screw into it so it didn't collapse on itself so they could do
surgery. How long ago did this happen?
2017. Almost 5 years ago to the day.
And setting expectations, for your clients to be able to make it that long. I mean, you settled last week. What'd you say, $8.2 million? Man, that is absolutely incredible.
Worse than a settlement, it's a verdict.
It's a verdict.
Yeah, they didn't offer enough money to settle it, so we tried it.
My God, that's
zero offer.
I think that's very important. Speaking from a doctor's standpoint, not a lawyer, there are many law firms, not Pond & Lahocki, not Schaefer Geyer, that basically, they're afraid to litigate cases. They're not experienced with it. They basically settle cases, and guess what? The insurance companies, the employers, the corporate entities,
take advantage of it.
They know when they see that name that they can't, that you're not calling their bluff. So the fact is, this poor, devastated individual may have gotten nothing or a de minimis response, but they said, we're taking you to court. We trust the jury system here. We trust that we can make it cogent, and this person and their family, clearly, I'm sure, made a cogent point as to all the pain and suffering, and they went through all the medical records. That can only happen at trial. Again, a lot of people, people I know, they want to take, I write good reports, but it's not the same as me going on Zoom or going live in a court. It's just not the same impact. And a lot of these firms are cheap. They don't want to pay experts. They cut corners. And the only person that suffers is the client.
We had all of our expert witnesses. We had 5 of them. 4 on his injuries, 1 on construction liability and OSHA standards. None of them by Zoom. They all came in. They all came into the courtroom. City Hall. 8 days of trial. Almost 2 weeks. The jury gave him everything he asked for regarding medical bills, future medical bills, past lost income, and future lost income, plus pain and suffering.
They offered zero money. The jury came back and said, Judge, can you read back the numbers for future lost wages, which was, I think, over $2 million. And then they started scrambling. Maybe we'll offer you some money, which wasn't enough at the time. But one thing that was really helpful, maybe, Doctor, you could talk about this. We made graphs. Michael did an unbelievably good job. Michael Gard did an unbelievably good job at this, was making graphs and illustrations about the injury, which was a terrific job.
Medical images showing the plates and screws in his pelvis. He had, you mentioned the pelvis, the sacrum was fractured. There were screws and plates to the sacrum in the back, and then other screws and plates in the pelvis in the front.
We got about a minute left, Doc. Man, let me tell you something. I mean, that is just an unbelievable. So when I think about them offering nothing, thank God they retained Schaefer and Guyer. I mean, thank God they retained intern. I mean, and by the way, thank God Palma Hockey recognized, obviously, a firm that was going to go the distance. Guys, let me do a
unbelievable job on the Comcast.
Listen, and that, I mean, no shock there. And I'm sure that case goes to Social Security disability.
Yeah.
All right, listen, I want to thank, guys, Dr. Grossinger, you know, I mean, I'm glad you made it, brother, because...
Thanks for Tony Shuler for having me on the show.
Absolutely.
Thanks for my esteemed counselors, my doctors of jurisprudence here, my dear friends. And thanks. We're grateful to supporting our practice.
Absolutely. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the Who's Who in Philly Labor Show. I want to thank Mike Parker of Palma Hockey, Mike Guyer of Schaefer and Guyer, and of course, Mike Schaefer of Schaefer and Guyer, and Dr. Bruce Grossinger of Grossinger Neuropain, Matt Menarek, making it all happen. And of course, Drew Walker also for making it all happen. On behalf of everybody on the panel, I'm Joe Dougherty. Thanks for listening, everybody.